Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron, and I want to welcome John to the studio. Morning, John.
Kia ora. Looks like a good morning this morning.
So, did you enjoy the power cuts?
Yeah, it was great. I had a walk round on Wednesday evening, and you could see the stars beautifully, and it was really quiet. And the only lights that were on were at Foursquare.
Yeah, they have their own generator. It's not enough to run their freezers and the fridges, but it is enough to keep the power on. And
A few other people looked like they had candles, but apart from that, it was dark.
It's so long since we had a decent power cut that we found three bedraggled-looking candles in the house, and that was about it. Like in the days gone by, you always had some spare candles, and you knew where they were because you had to use them a fair bit.
It's the longest power cut we've had since I've lived in Raglan.
Yeah, well, I don't remember the lengths. I remember they used to be very regular around the year 2000.
But they only lasted an hour or two, and the lights were back on.
Yeah, and we had another one Sunday night, Monday morning as well.
Well, they had a power cut when they reconnected the system, didn't they, and cut the generators off.
Yeah, so that was, what night was that?
I've forgotten now.
Yeah, me too. It's a bit confusing. I think that
was a long week.
Yeah, whatever night that was not night. There was another power cut Sunday night, Monday morning, centered on Tahutawai Road. I don't know what that was, but that was, I just woke up and noticed the power was off, and then it was on again. And I had to come and restart the radio station, as I had to do several times over the last week or so.
Yeah, because I thought when they built that substation at Hills Road and connected us up with the wind farm, that they said they were going to put in two lines. So we already had the 11,000 volt line, and then they said they were going to, so that was an overhead line, and they said they were going to put in a 33,000 volt underground line, and that with the two lines it should be much more reliable than it had been.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't comment on that because I can't remember them saying that, but I do know, like, I interviewed the networks manager from Well Networks, and that's not his exact title. I said, we seem to be out on a limb here, and he said, well, in the next couple of years, I can't remember whether he said 25 or 26.
26, yeah.
They're going to build another 33 kV line. So
maybe they didn't finish it off.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's what we're wondering. Maybe they didn't quite finish it or something. I'm not sure. That was 2011, you said, so.
Yeah, well, that's when the wind farm went in and when the substation got built, so, yeah.
Yeah, so that would be lost in the mists of time.
But they're going to need to provide for all the extra housing that's going in over at Rangitahi and various other places.
Yeah, the Koning Farm is going to come online in a few years as well, so. Yeah, although I did hear somewhere that the building has slowed down a little bit because of the economic downturn. Well, the enforced economic downturn by the government.
Yeah, well, I suppose we'll see whether that happens or not.
Yeah, I mean, it'll bounce back. It always does. It'll come back quite quickly as soon as they lower interest rates because they keep them artificially high. But then, yeah, it'll start up again.
Because they've been busy producing reports for that new development over that side of Raglan. And I think we talked about the roading one last time we talked, and there's also one that they've done on the Three Waters.
So what did you I had trouble reading that because it was a bit impenetrable to me, and I had like 5 minutes. But what did you take away from that, John?
Well, the main surprise to me was that they were still talking about using the spring, the one that's sort of almost opposite the dump at Extreme.
Right.
So that's the other side of the valley from there.
Well, so that's a spring that gets its water from the mountain, obviously, like it's an underground thing, and that currently serves us. Why are you surprised at that? Like, there doesn't appear to be any pressure on it at the moment.
Well, my recollection is that last time they got resource consent for it, there was quite a quibble over whether they were taking too much, and they're proposing to take quite a lot more from that spring to provide for the new development. But apparently Tonkin Taylor's done a survey, which I've not yet seen. I don't know why these things don't just get published generally, because I don't think most people have seen the water report or the road report, and I've not seen the one which has been done on the Raglan Spring Source Hydrogeological Assessment. So apparently they've done one of those and decided that the spring can provide a lot more water. So I'd be interested to see what's changed since the last resource consent and whether the regional council agree that they can take a lot more out of it.
How can we, like, there's a whole mountain full of water up there, right? Obviously, not all of it's coming out that spring.
Presumably, that's what the geological assessment says. Yeah.
I mean, maybe they have a better idea of kind of what it's, what area it's pulling water from. Like, it could be like such a large area that we could just take water out of it and never notice the difference. I don't know.
Because last time I heard, they didn't know where the water came from. They just knew that it came out at that point and that it was a reliable source that didn't vary much with the seasons.
Yeah, which is a, that's a good sign that there's like quite an inexhaustible supply, I guess. Yeah, but we don't really know beyond that. We're speculating now, aren't we, John?
Well, until we see this assessment that they've done. So, having become aware of it, I might try and see if I can get hold of a copy.
Okay, here's a question. They're building a new sewage treatment plant at the moment. Is it big enough to handle? I've never asked anyone this question. Is it big enough to handle all the new houses that have been built, like the 1,000 or so that we're getting?
Oh, they're talking about all those houses going into that same sewage work, because, of course, most of them are being built quite close to it, even in the same valley. So, yeah, it's going to be mostly a gravity feed down to the sewage works, but some of them are being built in the next valley. And for those, they're saying that where there's a low point, then they'll still have to pump the water up over the hill and do the same as they do for most of Raglan and have the sewage pumping stations around.
Well, we've got 24. What's another couple of sewage pumping stations?
Some more to leak.
Some more to leak. Well, maybe they won't.
Some more to fail when the power goes off.
Maybe they won't put them down by the water.
Yeah, well, most of the VIS development's not taking place near the water, so, yeah, that's a saving grace for it.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, you people would say, oh, why did we make the sewage system so vulnerable? Well, that was when there didn't used to be a sewage system. Raglan was one of the last places in the country that had a night cart man. I think it was the 70s, maybe it was
1973,
where he stopped?
Yeah.
Yeah. My parents told me that the night cart man was always a threat to use to make them behave when they were children in the, like, 40s and 50s. anyway, Raglan...
Really, like, the best watermelons, apparently.
Yes, I could see how that would work. So anyway, at that point, they must have put in... and so when you go from night cart man to having the sewage network, it all seems pretty fabulous, even though you've put your access lids, or manholes as they used to be called, down close to the water, close to the high tide mark. It's still such a big improvement. You don't worry about things like that. But now now we do.
And we weren't thinking of sea level rise at that time either.
So. No. We were just getting started with a bit of sea level rise then, weren't we? Or the work required to bring it about.
And quite a lot of the pipes were made of asbestos cement, so that's another issue as well.
Yeah, that was fabulous. Yep. The subject came up when we were having a lot of sewage spills in around 2016, and the council came up with various solutions, and the community chose which one they wanted to spend our money on. One of the solutions was to completely rebuild the network to get away from having the situation with the pump stations down near the water, and no one wanted to spend that much money.
Yep, so. And another option would be just to treat our sewage where we create it and not to add loads of water to it. So,
it's been really hard to get any traction on that idea, John, hasn't it? Because we've been talking about this for a while.
Yeah, there was something of an argument about it a week or two ago when the council was talking about the structure plan for Te Hutawai for the new development, and that they were insistent that all the wastewater ought to go into their sewage plant rather than be treated by local sewage systems.
Yeah, they did the same for Rangitahi. I remember talking to the planners for Rangitahi, like, before any work was started, and they're like, they wanted to have their own supposedly eco-friendly, I think from memory, version of sewage treatment over at Rangitahi, but the council wouldn't let them. I think the council, we know that they're terrified of liability issues. And as a public health issue, sewage is quite a scary one, I should imagine. So rather than leaving it to... I don't think they even want to... people do have... I mean, you and I both know people who've got composting toilets at their house.
Well, anybody who's not on the mains connection has them.
Yeah. So. Are we allowed them in town?
No.
No, yeah.
Well, not without a resource consent. So you need to go through a whole resource consent procedure.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, you know how cautious the council is about these liability issues. I imagine that's what's driving that. So you've got to find a way around that and have like a foolproof system.
Yeah, because the systems are steadily improving, and in that, as I say, they're widely used outside the reticulated area, so all over the country. So there's a fair amount of experience with them.
But are you talking about a full composting system, or are you talking about something that's dealt with on the property? So there might be some field work, for want of a better phrase.
There's a mix of systems. So some of them are using field drains, which require at least, about 2,000 square metres.
So that's a problem in town.
Yeah, but there are also systems which deal with them in a much smaller area, and I know a couple of people have got them installed in town, or in this town and in Hamilton. So it is possible to do it in a much smaller area, and there are systems which are available that do that. So I've not really understood why council's still so opposed to having local systems, unless they just see it as a threat to their rates that they might end up with only a few people using their main sewage system and having to cover the cost of it.
I don't think they will, though. Even in Raglan, most people are going to find composting toilet systems a bit icky. Let's face it. Do you agree with my assessment that they're worried about liability as well? Like, if they give approval to one of these things and someone gets sick, then they could be sued, and that's what their lawyers will be advising them?
Could be, but it's equally a problem if something goes wrong with the main system, which, as we keep seeing, it does.
Yeah, well, yes, good point. Very good point.
It's not as if we've got a foolproof main sewage system.
Yeah, the thing, I don't disagree with you. I just have seen so little movement on this issue in the last 20 years that at the moment, I don't see it as a viable option to push for, even.
Yep. But anyway, that's where we are in terms of that. The new development's going ahead. They're talking about the problem of extra traffic on Tuhutuwai Road. The long-term idea is that you probably put a roundabout in at the junction of Tuhutuwai Road and Wainui Road.
And there's room there to do that.
Yep. And also in the slightly longer term, that you put a bypass around Raglan of some sort, but they've still not decided quite where that should go or what form it should take, whether it should be a 60-kilometre-an-hour road or a 40-kilometre-an-hour road.
Well, it's not going to be much of a bypass if it's 40, is it? No one's even going to...
But it's still a shorter route, so if you're coming from that side of town...
You can't call it a bypass and make it 40Ks, John, surely.
The alternative route is longer and still 40 kilometres an hour, so, yeah, to that extent, it's a bypass.
Okay. John's talking about a document that the council's produced, which somehow you got your hands on. I was quite surprised you got your hands on it, but it's basically a discussion paper about options for roading for the future in Raglan and Whangaroa and the bypass road. There's three or four different lines drawn on the map.
We did talk about it a couple of weeks ago, but I just thought whilst we were talking about the Tuhutuwai area, I'd mention that. I don't think I did mention it last time.
Yeah, I hadn't even looked at it myself, but I have seen a little bit of it since then. So that's the thing. And we know it would come through around the back of Rangitahi somewhere and go through the Koning development right through the middle of it by the look of it and end up near the turnoff into the Wainui Reserve. And council did try to buy a piece of land there a little while ago so they could build another roundabout in the future, many years in the future, but it was too expensive for them.
Well, it wasn't just a roundabout. It was to realign the road because they don't like the idea of there being one T-junction, probably about 50 or 100 metres from another T-junction.
Oh, okay.
So they were trying to avoid staggered junctions.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure why, because some roads were designed with staggered junctions, so you couldn't just race straight across the main road. So I'm not quite sure what the objection these days is to staggered junctions, but it'd be good if all these things get discussed in public rather than just in documents that only a handful of people seem to see. And we have got the Raglan transport study coming up, so it could well be that that discussion will take place then, including the traffic lights on the bridge.
Hold on, was that not the Raglan transport study? What's that? What are the, I don't understand, John. Are there two things happening?
Yes. So this was a study that I think came out, as far as I can make out, about 2 years ago. So it's probably about 2 years old. And now they're talking about starting a new study, which will involve consultation. So presumably they'll publish a version of this book for consultation, and then we'll all be able to talk about parking and single lane bridges and all the other stuff.
Yeah. And now that was interesting, because the thing we were talking about from that last time also was that, well, I don't know if it was last time or 4 weeks ago, was putting traffic lights on the bridge. And this idea popped up, and I asked about it at a community board meeting, and no one even knew about it because, as usual, John had found something that no one else had seen. And it was interesting to read the document, and I can, because here in Raglan we're like, no, we don't want traffic lights on the bridge. The last time we tried to put them up, people threw them in the water, and we've got our own system where everyone gives each other a go. Once people have lived in Raglan for a while, they get the system, and you know, it works fine. But reading the documents, I can see it puts you in the headspace of where the engineers are at, and for them, they're like, okay, if all the research shows that if you put lights on a bridge, you can extend the life of the single lane bridge X amount of years and save some money, and then eventually you'll have to two lane the bridge. So for them,
they're talking about putting 1,000 houses up there before they build a new bridge.
Yeah, well, the houses are coming, so don't worry.
Well, the houses come with cars usually.
Yeah, that's I know. That's what I mean. But it was just interesting to get, like, I managed to get inside their heads a little bit, and to them it seems perfectly reasonable to put lights on the bridge. And out here in Raglan, it seems perfectly reasonable to not put lights on the bridge, and I don't know how that one's going to play out over the long term.
Well, this morning the council's discussing its annual plan, or its extended annual plan, as they're calling it, and one of the recommendations there from the staff says trial lights on Wainui Bridge is deferred and will be considered as part of the development of the next long-term plan. So that's the long-term plan next year.
Yeah, so they've just... That's almost meaningless being put off a year. Like, that doesn't mean much to us, does it?
And they say the need to undertake this trial was identified in the Raglan Transport Study to support the local network and maintain a level of service, particularly during peak periods. The trial was included in the annual plan consultation document as a result of the study and pressure from development to the west of the bridge. But given the slowdown of development to the west of Wainui Bridge over the past 12 months, which is what you were just talking about, staff support deferring the project and will review the timing as part of the long-term plan considerations. So look forward to seeing it in the long-term plan next year.
Yeah, and the great big scheme of things, it doesn't mean that much. Now, when I mentioned it at the community board, like all our local politicians were like, it's stupid, you don't want a light. Well, they didn't say those words, but they were on board with the sentiment that is local sentiment, that there's no way we want lights on the bridge. But it was just, I can see now that there's a potential for a battle there between the community and council because they're very, very different perspectives.
Well, I think this is probably one of the motivations for doing a public consultation on transport.
Yeah.
So that presumably is going to take place before the next long-term plan. It's an opportunity to discuss what we do with transport, because we already have parking problems in the CBD. And if you try and park another 1,000 cars in the CBD, you're going to create even more problems. So,
Do we really? I mean, people from Auckland would laugh at us for thinking we have parking problems here in the CBD. We can no longer park outside the shop we want to. We actually can right now, folks, if you're quick. I don't know. I know people feel quite strongly about it. They want more parking. Well, they've been given more parking. But it's not going to make up for the fact that there's 1,000 new houses.
There's still a big empty car park down at the rugby ground, so I'd be surprised if there's more than two vehicles parked in that.
But see, psychologically, that's just so disconnected from the middle of town.
Well, maybe we need to make some form of connection to it. And there's all sorts of options possible. You maybe have some sort of cycle, or you maybe have some sort of moving walkway, or
a moving walkway all the way down Park Drive.
It's feasible. I imagine all these ideas will come up, and many of them like that will be ruled out as being way too expensive. But there are ways of providing that extra mobility, because otherwise we're talking about building a multi-story car park in the centre of town somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's at kind of the joke level at this point in time. Like, people think that's a hilarious idea and no one takes it seriously.
And that's also very expensive, so, yeah.
Yeah, I think, what did they do at Pi here? They built a big car park sort of out the back of the town.
Yes, so that's probably much the same distance as the rugby ground from our CBD.
There's really weird things about how, because that isn't far away, you're quite right, but it feels like as soon as you go past the roundabout at the top of Bow Street, just near where we are, you're psychologically you're out of town and you don't want to park. Like, I feel it every time I have to park outside that area, and I know everyone else does. And I want to go back to the placemaking thing that happened in 2014. Like, part of what that was just creating visual things that somehow tie it all together. And it's really weird how it works. It's like subconscious psychological stuff, but if you do it right, it feels like it's part of town and you feel like you're in the right place and it's okay.
Well, probably the difference in Pi here is that you've only got to cross one road to get from the car park to the centre of town.
And there's shopping.
Whereas we've got to cross, the footpath crosses from one side to the other on Park Drive, and then you've got to cross James Street, and then you've got to go around the corner. So you've got, psychologically, I think, a more complex route than Pi here's got.
You're definitely right, and that's part of what I'm saying. Like, that would be the first thing you'd have to do, is have a proper footpath. Mm-hmm. And having the engineers there would also feel like, psychologically, like you'd broken out of the CBD and were into somewhere different. Okay, all right, so we're not going to solve that this morning, but that's a thing. John, what else we got?
Well, we've from time to time talked about the state of the gravel roads, Tuhutuai Road and Whanga Road, and the report that is with the council this morning talks about works of recently being carried out at Tuhutuai Road, including over 600 T, I'm not sure what T is, whether it's 600 tonnes of metal.
Must be.
And associated drainage works, clearing culverts, surface water channels, and Whanga Road is programmed for grading and surface water channel clearing in June. So both of those hopefully will be sorted out soon.
So did it say Tuhutuai Road had drainage works? Because that was the problem. Like, they needed to, long term, they couldn't just like smooth it over, because the next heavy rain it was going to
Yeah, you could see where the rain had crossed the road.
Yeah, it was just going to happen all over again. So they've sorted that for Tuhutuai. Whanga Road, grading and surface water. But which bit? Which bit of Whanga Road? It's a really long road. All of it? Answer me, John.
It doesn't specify, presumably, all the problem bits of it, because some parts of it are in good condition, but some parts of it definitely aren't. So presumably they're going to work on the bits which aren't.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Maybe you've got information that we haven't got. So.
Craig, who lives up Tuhutuai Road, said water tables still haven't all been fixed on Tuhutuai. Okay. What does he mean by that, water tables? Does that mean the drains aren't deep enough?
That's the associated drainage works that they claim have been done, recently being carried out.
So not all of it is what Craig's telling us. I don't know what he's basing that on.
So maybe he needs to tell the council that their report's not right.
Because does the report say all of them?
Well, it says works have recently been carried out. It doesn't claim that they've all been done, but it says that they've put over 600 T of metal on.
600 tonnes. Yeah, well, the average dump truck has about 7 tonnes of stuff. Culverts cleared, etc. I do know, when that problem first arrived, an original understanding was that there was going to be some work done, and then when the new budget came in on the 1st of July, then they would have more money to sort out the long-term issues. It sounds like they've tried to sort out quite a lot of the long-term issues already, so maybe they still need to wait for a bit more money to come online.
Yep.
But I am guessing, right? That's a guesstimate.
Because one of the other points in they've got in their briefing this morning is that they're saying mode share, by which they mean anything other than driving is an important aspect of our transport network, and we'll continue to fund diversity of modes as appropriate, which is then qualified by saying, however, our primary funding is spent on the core activity of renewing and maintaining our roads and associated assets, whatever's left over from maintaining Tuhutuai Road and all the other roads is going to go to walking and cycling and public transport, but probably not very much.
Yeah, we've had a couple of experiences, like especially State Highway 23 going down. Like, our culture is so dependent on cars and roads, like it's to a profound level. Because I'm fully supportive of everything you're aiming for, John, but I can also see that the people, the engineers at council, the people spending the money are like, we can't not do this with our roads, because there'll just be people at breaking down their gates, yeah, basically.
I see it as a chicken and egg situation. So if you carry on spending all your money on things which help cars get around, then you carry on creating the problem with not just the problem of how you move around, but also the associated climate change problems and traffic safety problems.
Very true. But if you've got a limited budget, you need to... I mean, if they could keep spending the same on their roads and then get some more money out of somewhere and start working on alternative modes, as they call it here, that would probably be the ideal solution.
Yes.
Yes, okay. But that's not happening this year.
Yeah, because, well, certainly we're not with the current government. But,
yes, yeah. They're trying to kill our economy at the moment for its own good, though.
Because the budget included an extra $1 billion for roads of national significance.
It's such a bogus phrase. It's such an ego boost for anyone who gets to announce roads of national significance. I'm sure that's the main reason it has that title. I know I'm being very cynical about the government, but I suspect most of our audience feels the same way.
Yeah. Well, most of them have got a pretty appalling cost-benefit ratio as well. So you put $1 billion in and you get about $220 million out of it.
Okay, there's a lot of detail there that we probably don't have time to get into, but we'll take your word for it.
That's another issue. It's not local. Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on.
The final thing I've noted from this morning's agenda is that council is unaware of the community becoming ill as a direct result of the current treated effluent discharge. Warning signs are erected at the estuary discharge point, advising against swimming, fishing, or collecting shellfish from the surrounding area.
So that's about last week?
No, this is in general about, because this was before last week, this is about where the sewage gets discharged out at the end of Riria Kariopa Memorial Drive.
Oh, have they been actually done some testing there because of all the pressure RAR's been putting on?
I don't know. They've just made this comment. Because there were quite a number of people who put in submissions saying they ought to do something about it. And the council's response is that they're unaware of anyone becoming ill because of the sewage that comes out there, or treated sewage that comes out there.
Well, that could be one of those bland statements that just covers the fact that no one's checked. So it's hard. I know that...
Because I keep hearing rumours of people who are ill, but I've not actually met anyone.
No, the rumours will drive you crazy, John, if you start trying to follow that up. And if there's certain diseases that you get where the public health, it becomes a public health issue, and there's a person from council whose job it is to follow up. It happened to one of my kids when they were really little. They'd been on a farm, and they got sick, and we took them to the doctor, and it was diagnosed, and somehow they went in the system, and then this guy turns up on our doorstep from council wanting to check in, and it's just like a publicly notifiable thing, and this might be the same, I don't know. Anyway, I'm just saying there's a system in place for actually possibly tracking these things.
Okay, so council should be aware if there is anything, and they say they're not aware, so maybe there is nothing.
Well, the thing, like, there's a lot of storm being kicked up about that outlet. It does follow, by and large, follow the rules. And I asked regional council specifically when it's broken the rules, how bad is it? And it was like just a little bit broken the rules. So you're not suddenly going, it doesn't work that you go from scientifically proven to be safe to it's a diabolical problem. Uh-huh. It's like it's just slightly a little bit worse.
The level of risk gets slightly worse.
Yeah, slightly worse to the point where all the regional council decided to do, because you've got to understand the regional council monitors the work the district council does. All the regional council did was say, we're just keeping an eye on them about this issue. That was their only response to it. So I know people think it's a conspiracy that the council's out to like make our lives really hard. I've just was on Facebook reading people's comments. I'm pretty sure that's what they think. But there's just some bureaucrats doing their work over in Hamilton, and they, yeah.
Yeah, maybe we can put out an appeal to listeners. If anyone does know of any illness, then let us know. But don't hear anything, then we'll assume that council's right.
I mean, it's a fair question. Like, how would you prove it, right?
Well, presumably, I don't know, my knowledge of medicine, zero, but presumably there's some way of working out where illnesses come from in some cases. Maybe not all are attributable, but some, if we've got lots of people surfing and swimming and walking on the beach and getting cuts and things like that, then presumably someone somewhere is going to note that we've got a higher than average incidence of whatever diseases you pick up that way.
You can't trust the rumour mill. Like on Thursday, Mike from the community house came into the radio station and he said to me, I've been downtown, I've heard that the power's coming back on this afternoon, this evening and tomorrow. He's like, which is it? Just a quick walk downtown, he's come away with three contradictory pieces of information. And
at that time, we're busy trying to organise the influx of generators that we got.
Yeah, I said some of us will be getting it now. Like pretty much right now, and others will be later. And at that point, I didn't know if they'd found the fault. So, I don't know. All I'm saying is we don't know anything for sure around this issue.
We move on and talk about the electric vehicle charger that's being put in on Wallace Street.
Yes, so,
they've now decided it's going to be outside the bowling club on Wallace Street, and it's going to be a 15-year lease. And the council is going to get 5% of the money that people pay for charging their electric cars there.
So the bowling club should start selling coffee down there.
Well, presumably people can walk 5 minutes up to the centre of town and go and get their coffee and then walk back again and their car will be ready to go.
Again, John, that psychologically that's too far from town for us, isn't it? Although neither of us drive an electrical car because you don't drive a car.
I've just walked in that distance this morning, well, more than that distance, and it's not difficult.
So the background to this is they turned up at the community board meeting last year, around about this time, the electric people, and they wanted to put it outside the hardware store, and that meant taking away a couple of parks for normal parks, for EV parks, and everyone there commented that that's probably going to lead to some fist fights in the street because people dashing into the hardware store in a high-pressure area will take the parks, and there'll be quite a lot of upset, and they didn't want it there. It was suggested it go over somewhere near the old school on Stewart Street, which is closer to the CBD psychologically, but apparently they've decided to put it down by the bowling club.
Yep, and I was surprised to see that the one that's behind us here at the town hall, apparently they're only getting about $1,000 a year income from it.
$1,000?
Yep. The charging there. I thought it was quite well used, but maybe it shows that there's long periods when it's not being used or
they're not charging enough.
Or that it's just very cheap to charge an electric car.
Well yeah, but remember it was free. And they're trying to grow, I think they're trying to grow this market, so they'll be keeping costs down. But yeah, $1,000 a year doesn't seem much, but then, I mean, how much work do they have to do? But not much.
Yep. Well, it also seemed odd to me that council wanted 5% of that $1,000 to allow them to have that park there.
$50
a year.
$50 a year.
And it seems to me that in terms of the council budget, that's peanuts. But in terms of discouraging people from using electric cars.
Also peanuts.
That's an extra 5% on your cost of charging, so, which is also small.
How much does it cost? Does anybody know? I don't know.
I don't know. I've not got an electric car.
No, we really don't know what we're talking about, do we, John? But I'm going to say 5% of turnover. Imagine that half the cars in town are then charged by electricity in spots that the council runs, and the council's getting 5%. Then it becomes significant.
Yep. I know it costs about 30 cents to recharge my bike. So
30 cents, John?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You've got an expensive... That'll get me to Hamilton.
That's an expensive bike, yeah. I think ours is 9 cents.
Oh, that's charging batteries enough to get to Hamilton back.
So. Yeah, I would get stuck about halfway. Hamilton and back. Yeah, okay, fair enough. So the next thing on the list.
Well, it's the most important thing on the list as far as you and I are concerned, town hall seismic strengthening. So
you've got four
words. I look up at that beam there and wonder when it's going to come down.
It's not the beam that'll come down. It's the other things. But what does that mean? That's four words, town hall seismic strengthening.
Well, they say that it's two-thirds complete and that it's going to be completed by the end of July.
Okay.
So maybe we'll see some more work happening here.
I think all they're doing with that, as far as I can tell, is they're putting some spray coats on that give some fireproofing to some of the structural elements so that they don't fall over quickly when there's a fire and people have a better chance of getting out. I think that's...
But that's not seismic strengthening.
Unless
the place catches fire.
Okay, so I'm saying that because I talked to someone who was in here, and you're right, that's not seismic strengthening. So I'm a little confused because you tracked a while ago that most of the proposed budget for town hall seismic strengthening was diverted somewhere else.
Yeah, off to the beacon. Yeah, the navigation beacon.
Okay, I'm rolling my eyes. but presumably.
And talking of navigation, they're also saying that the Puriri Street boat ramp is in the same two-thirds complete situation and also complete by the end of July.
Okay, all right. And the Wainui Beach car park?
Work has been awarded to a contractor. Construction dates are yet to be programmed.
Okay.
So, don't know.
Implementation of fees across boat ramps and associated parking is an option that has been assessed. So I thought that was... So our community board wanted it. Mm-hmm. Dennis Amor, who's a member of the bowling club.
Boating club, yeah.
Oh, whoops, boating club.
Fishing club.
Same road. He's down at the wharf. Fishing club, yeah. Said that he was pushing, he was behind it. He had support of the fishing people so long as the money went into fishing equipment. and then the staff said, no, we're not doing it. But now what? It's back on the table?
Looks like it, yes.
Maybe Dennis has been like rattling a few cages.
Yeah, a few people mentioned it in their submissions to the annual plan, so that maybe got it moving again.
Okay. It is
It does show that it's worth submitting to the annual plan.
Yeah, I mean you feel like, because the thing you put in didn't get listened to, that they never listen, but, I mean, they're juggling a lot of things, but if a lot of people submit, then they are certainly more likely to pay attention.
I do get the impression that with the new mayor, things have improved quite a bit, so they're not as stuck in the mud as they were. And, of course, we've also got some new councillors as well. And, maybe that harks back to the Māori ward representation again. We've now got five Māori councillors rather than one. So.
But that's only from two wards. Yeah. The whole council is very different to what it was 15 years ago, I would say, when it was literally mostly retired farmers. It's a very, very different council.
One of the other things that the community board's been pushing is to charge Soundsplash enough to cover all the costs and provide some money for Wainui Reserve. So, again, the council is investigating event fees and is planning a workshop with the community board to understand community preferences.
Do you know what? I'm going to be blunt about this. The community board is putting a disproportionate amount of time into this discussion. We've got so many different issues. And community board meeting after board meeting, it's like talking about Soundsplash. Are we going to pin them down and get them to pay the right amount?
Or maybe the community meeting needs to make clear to the community board what its preferences are then.
Well,
quite sure how you go about doing that or why the council's only talking to the community board and not the wider community.
Because the community board's been the one asking the question.
Okay, reasonable answer.
Yeah, I feel like we have bigger problems in town than whether they can get an extra 10 grand out of Soundsplash. That's my opinion on that.
Yep. Well, there's also the one of the issues I've not mentioned in the notes I sent you is that they're looking at spending some more money on creating a bike track across Wainui Reserve to get to the Pine Forest where the cycle trail is.
Yeah.
So that's probably going to require some more money in the way of extra gravel and things like that and amending gates and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, all those things are costs which ends up paying for.
It sounds like you could pay for them. Is that what you're going to say?
Well, that's maybe where the thought's going. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, only comment I've heard in the background is that, like, they're trying to compare to other sites. There's not actually a lot of infrastructure there for Sound Splash. It's not like there's a stage that was built or you know, anything like that. There's just some electricity points, and that's about it. And I don't know if that's enough electricity. It's three-phase power up there, so maybe that is enough to do everything they need. But
well, I think about 2001, they did do quite a lot of work to create the amphitheatre, which is one of the venues for the Sound Splash, but most of it takes place away from that.
The amphitheatre. Did they create it? Like, that's just it's a bowl shape in the hill. Do they create that shape?
it was partly engineered and partly natural, mostly natural. But they also enhanced it as far as creating terraces that people could sit on and that sort of thing. So,
oh, so that wasn't those weren't created by cows?
Well, some of them. It was more tidying up what had been created by cows. Yeah, because they're in a rather straighter line than cows would have made.
Yeah, so. Cows won't walk straight, will they? Okay, all right. What do you want to mention? Oh, you want to mention the Stop the Fast Track March for Nature?
Yeah. So coming up on Saturday is the march in Auckland, Aotea Square, and Cousins organised a bus to get there. So, if you're thinking it'd be a good idea to get involved in that, then there are quite a number of fast-track issues which could well affect us here. Like, you might remember, Anadarko was thinking of having an oil field off the Raglan coast about 10 years ago. Mm. Also, when Trans-Tasman Resources started looking at mining for iron sand, or it now seems to be more looking at titanium and vanadium, that they were... Which talking about mining off the Raglan coast, and Chasm got formed, and they decided maybe it would be easier to get permission to mine off the South Taranaki coast, so they switched their attention there.
Oh, is that what happened? I was... Okay.
They never said that, but suddenly they gave up the idea that... Because they had the option of... They had... I forgot what it's called, the mining permission, whatever it is, mining rights to take sand from either our coast or from the South Taranaki coast.
And yeah.
Whereas the initial proposals were about our coast, once Chasm was formed, they switched to the South Taranaki coast. So maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it was a more viable way of doing it. Maybe it was also looking to have less opposition. And if that was the case, then if we get this fast track, then there's no way to oppose. It's going to be decided by an expert panel, and the final decision will be Shane Jones's decision. With he can ignore what the expert panel tells him. So we could end up with seabed mining off our coast as well. And the oil as well. So it seems to me this area has quite an interest in what happens with the seabed mining and the fast track bill. So as I say, if you are interested, there is this March for Nature, as they're calling it, starting 1 o'clock at Aotea Square in Auckland, and Chasm's organised a bus on Saturday morning to go up there. So if you're interested, have a look at the Chasm website and book onto that bus.
Okay. All right. Do we want to mention the sewage thing that's popped up online?
Well, you know more about that than I do.
Well,
what's the story?
Much. Well, Ra's got some new angle that he's having a go at the council about.
Ra being who?
Ra Puriri, one of our DJs. The man who got the runway protest going. And has been saying things about the sewage system which are not very factually accurate, according to the information I've gathered on it.
We've ended up with a successful conclusion on the runway by the look of it.
But not because of what he did. Like, that was always going to happen. Like, there's a Treaty of Waitangi Tribunal report out that says that that land should go back to the original owners, which Ra never read.
So, yeah, but there's a de facto walkway across the middle of the runway, which...
That's weird, because council said they were going to remove that, but they've just kind of left it there.
Yeah. I mean, I get the impression, talking to council staff, that they think there's so few aircraft using it now that it's not a problem.
So. Yeah, so according to people who are involved in the flying scene in the North Island, most of the pilots are scared to land here now. They think that they will get abused when they land. So
and it's more awkward as well. You've only got a small space to land in, and if you've got a strong crosswind, then it doesn't make life easy.
I haven't heard anyone say that's a problem, but...
But it's also hard to spot the fence from the air, which is why they ended up putting white markers on top of the fence posts, but they're still only small markers and still quite hard to see.
Yeah. So anyway, now there's some stuff about how the council should have got a much cheaper... new sewage system, but the sewage system is already under construction, so it's a completely pointless discussion because that can't be changed. Once they've started building it, that's never going to change. And given the inaccuracies that Ra was talking last time he talked sewage issues, I would imagine that what he's saying now is also riddled with inaccuracies.
Well, it could change because they've still got to get a resource consent for the sewage works.
But they've already started construction.
Yes, well, that's because they were breaching the previous resource consent, and it doesn't look good to go into a new consent with breaches of the previous one.
I don't understand. Like, they've started building the new membrane reactor thingy-majig.
MBR, yeah.
Yes.
Yes, well, they're doing that because they were fairly consistently breaching the, was it 2008 resource consent?
Well, yeah, they're doing that, but that's what I'm saying, they've already started, so it's not like they've already started building the system, and Ra's saying there's a cheaper system, which may or may not be the case, but in any case, they've already started building this one, so they're hardly going to stop it part of the way through and go to a supposedly cheaper system.
No, but that's not the end of the story, because they've still got to get a resource consent, and they've still not decided what their final system is going to be, particularly on the discharge, so they're looking at whether they... go for a land-based discharge or whether they carry on putting it out into the harbour.
So that's not what he's talking about. He's and my understanding from talking to like Lisa Thompson is there's no money down or anything at the moment, but the cost of doing the land-based treatment, it's going to be very, very high. And at some point, the community is going to have to face those numbers and decide whether they want to spend them and put our rates up to do it.
Yep, well, we've still not got the final report on that. So there's another of the Zoom meetings coming up at the end of this month, I think it is.
So that's the water, what's the water's body that you're the only person that ever observes?
Well, they're all available online if anyone wants to look at the council's website and see their previous recordings.
But what's it called, the Waters Governance Board?
No, that's the official liaison between council and the... water care.
So what one are you talking about?
They've set up a Raglan group to look at the what is it, wastewater resource consent, I think.
Is that like a stakeholder group or something?
Well, it was originally, but now it's advertised as open to anybody who wants to join in. So,
okay. And John, I just realised I should pick up on this, that their council's now live streaming its meetings and even its workshops soon.
Yeah,
you've been calling for this for years, decades even.
Yeah, it does show that the new mayor is making changes. So, yeah, it's quite interesting because the minutes have always been very brief, but you can find out a lot more by actually watching what's being said. And as the mayor said in her media release, you can actually see sort of different views that are coming out from the various councillors and the questions that are raised and the answers that they get. So
yeah.
I certainly recommend taking a look at one or two of them. They don't usually last all that long, so, and you can always turn it off if you get fed up with it, but it's worth looking at.
At least you get the satisfaction of turning it off. All right, John, thank you for your time this morning. John's going to be on the air again tonight at 6 o'clock. Every time I ask him what he's going to do, he doesn't know yet at this time of day, so I won't ask. But he will probably have more details on some of this. That's usually the case, isn't it, John?
Yeah, and I've checked the date of the next sewage Zoom, which is Thursday the 13th.
So we'll talk about
6:30.
That. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's in 9 days' time.
Yeah. Okay, then. Thank you. All right, folks, end of the show for the day. I'll see you all again tomorrow.